Good evening, Baltimore, and hello, America. Make no mistake, keep following the light. The revolution will not be televised, but it will be on the radio. You're on with Changa Bell, and this is the Relationship Experience. Thanks for tuning in, and here we're going to be discussing both trending and not-so-trending topics around health, wellness, spirituality, to shift the most important relationship of all, the one with yourself. So it's truly an honor to get to speak with you this evening. I want you to snuggle up with your smartphone on EAA.org, park your car, do whatever you have to do. The next 60 minutes we will take just for ourselves. And of course, you, the listener, is always encouraged to join the conversation or just simply sit back and enjoy the audible ride. Coming up next week, we're going to be dealing with the romance of love. We'll have a spouse of a male exotic dancer, as well as some couples talking about what it's like to be in love. We want to include all members of our community, never excluding. And we want to invite you into the action. So tell us some humorous romance fails that you might have in 140 characters or less on Twitter using the hashtag RomanceFail, and do that at Changa Bell. So have that ready for next week, and I'll share some of those on air with us. You can also do that on Instagram at Changa Bell. Again, the hashtag is RomanceFail. And tonight we have an amazing guest in. She is a TV star, a radio star, but most importantly, she's a doctor. And so tonight we're talking about the effects of stress on a heart. Please welcome Dr. V. Dr. V, say hello.
Hi, so wonderful to be here. And Changa, thank you so much for having me tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my pleasure. We wanted to speak about some topics of health, but I want to do it in sort of a general fashion so that it's not so off-putting or just only health. My background, as you know, we were talking offline, is yoga and mindfulness, but you're the expert. And tell us a little bit about yourself in terms of what kind of doctor you are so that I don't have to do all the talking for you.
Sure. Well, it's funny, you know, my family is definitely one that has a diverse background. We're somewhat like citizens of the globe. And so I was actually born in Australia and moved back to the U.S., lived in Seattle, and then went to medical school on the East Coast and have kind of been there ever since, and lived in Chicago, Philly, kind of all over Texas, a little bit everywhere, and have landed in Baltimore. And it appears that this is going to be my forever home.
Oh, wow. Well, welcome, and thank you for coming here and giving some grace to the city. I've been here. My family's been here since 1921, and so we're third generation in the house. But let me ask you a question. So you're an anesthesiologist?
Yes.
So when did you know, Dr. V? When did you, like, was it fifth grade and you had an epiphany? You looked across the room and you saw somebody and you said, you know what? I want to knock them the heck out. Like, when did you know?
That's a good question. So I think the funny thing is, actually, my mom will tell this story and she's listening right now. But I've always wanted to be a doctor. I'd never wanted to do anything else ever in life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of my friends have really sexy, kind of interesting, cool careers where they meet all kinds of people. They travel all over the world. And I'm always like, wow, I never knew you could do that. And I never wanted to do anything else ever in life. And so the funny thing is, I think growing up, I actually looked at Bill Cosby and like the, that vision of like Dr. Huxtable, I really embraced that and it was very real to me. And I actually wanted to be a breast cancer surgeon and had an amazing mentor who was a black woman in Seattle and have been following that dream and passion for years. I did a lot of research in pharmacology and drug research and worked at Merck and worked in labs, you know, and as an undergraduate. And of course, I had an interest in women's health. And that's really what I've kind of channeled and what I've embraced even more as I've carved out my career. So I'm very passionate about women's health, underrepresented populations, and then also prevention. Mm-hmm. And so anesthesia, I kind of fell into anesthesia because it made sense. You know, I play with drugs and I play with drugs in a lab and
you can say that legally on air.
That's, legally, yes. Yeah. I'm trained to play with drugs. And so it, you know, I was very interested in women's health and cancer and cancer pain and wanted to have a comprehensive pain center that combined Reiki and massage therapy and biofeedback and massage and yoga, just like, you know, you embrace. And so really felt like you need to treat the whole person and the whole patient, and understanding the mind-body relationship, and not just wanting to prescribe medications to treat people.
Mm. Wow. Now that is not what I expected as an answer.
Really?
Yeah. And it's interesting. You said you fell into anesthesia. What is like one of the most unique things that's happened when you put someone under? Because I know for me, I had my first surgery when I was 15. I had a surgery at 15, 16, and 18.
Oh, wow.
Reoccurring inguinal hernias, okay. I think what it was. Now, I was scared to death to get put under.
I bet.
Because I asked the question, and I was like, well, you know, am I guaranteed to come back? And,
oh,
you know,
goodness.
Doctors, so they were like, well, you know, not really. And I was like, what?
Right, you're like, wait,
that wasn't what I planned on at 15 years old. So I stayed awake, but that was so painful and awkward the next two times I went to sleep.
Wow.
So what is like a more humorous or a lighthearted look at something that happened? You know, we see these YouTube viral videos with laughing gas.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything that sometimes is funny when you're putting someone under?
Well, I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, like your experience. I mean, I've even been a patient, too. So I think every time I draw back the curtain or I step into a room and talk to a patient, I want to think about myself and how would I feel if I was meeting you for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I have no clothes on, just this robe that I'm sure someone else wore before me, you know, and you're getting ready to take care of me. And I've never met you before. I don't know you. I don't know if you, you know, got a good night's sleep or what happened last night.
Mm-hmm.
And so my job is very much to make someone comfortable in a moment. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? So like I need to make someone feel comfortable with me and the care that I can deliver to you very quickly. And so I always find that it's important to somehow relate to the person that you're going to be taking care of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I think a lot of doctors, I mean, this might be like a light bulb going off for people, but we as physicians are somewhat superstitious. Like if you said, doc, am I going to wake up or do people die or, you know, could I die today? There are people who would actually cancel your surgery who are like, you know what?
Wow.
If this is kind of the way you're thinking, maybe we shouldn't do this today. I mean,
right.
It even makes me a little bit unnerved when someone says that.
Right.
Because every single day I put people to sleep and I wake you up. But like there's always that possibility it might not happen, you know, or things could go awry. And so we're people just like you are. We're scared too some days, you know what I mean? So, you know, I take my job 100% seriously. We try to make you comfortable coming into the operating room. So, you know, I don't really tell people jokes. I try to kind of find what they're interested in, you know, and we talk about that. Like as a patient I routinely take care of who's young and he comes for some serious procedures and I let him listen to his iPod as he goes off to sleep, you know, and like we talk about what he likes to listen to. He likes to listen to like Tupac and I'm like, oh, what about this song? You know, this one was my favorite. And, you know, he's kind of looking at me like, you like Tupac? And I'm like, yeah, what about Ricky Rose? You know, like you got to kind of somehow like reach someone so that they can be comfortable.
Right. And that's beautiful. And that I think that approach is often missing from allopathic medicine, or at least. So it's nice to hear you have that holistic approach. So I could talk to you for days about that. So you're just really easy to speak with about that. But the topic at hand and talking about stress on heart, I would imagine you see maybe quite a few cardio patients. I'm not really sure. But what is going on with the heart? What is it made of? Why is it so sensitive? Why does it have to be that way, Dr. B?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, it's one of the most important organs that we think about every single day. So essentially, the heart is it's a muscle, just like every other muscle in your body.
Mm.
But the most important thing about the heart and the brain is that they're very sensitive to oxygen. So in order for it to survive, to flourish, to, you know, do what it needs to do, it needs to be given oxygen. And so that's why it's so delicate. You know, when we think about stress places essentially, you know, work on the heart. It increases your heart rate. It makes your heart have to beat harder, which means it has to pump more blood, which increases your blood pressure. I mean, like, it's just everything is interconnected, you know. So what I do every day requires that I balance, you know, everything, like what's going on with your heart, with your brain. And so that's really why the heart is so essentially important and delicate, because it needs oxygen for everything that it does. And if you deprive it of oxygen in any kind of way, then you can cause damage to it.
Now, is there any truth to what I've always heard, that the heart cells are unique, that they are beating even before they actually form a heart, like in an embryo? Like, I've heard that, or maybe I saw that in some disinformation on YouTube or something. Do they actually pulse in the body as they're forming and they come together to form that heart?
So, I mean, if you're talking about embryology, there's a whole lot that's going on. You know what I mean? I mean, just the way that so the short answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Cells are coalescing and joining and dividing, and, you know, just looking at the trophoblast and how everything is dividing so quickly, you know, it's incredible and amazing. So yes, the heart is working and functioning and providing blood to that small developing embryo as soon as it's, you know, given life, you know. Mm-hmm. And that really, I think, almost enters into the debate that a lot of people have about, like, is it a baby, is it not? You know what I mean? So depending upon how you believe and what you believe, but that's why it's so important for, if you as a woman who was carrying a baby, to stay healthy, you know what I mean? Because everything that you intake, everything that you do, the stress you encounter, all is transmitted to a growing baby.
And I like what you said about breathing. Well, you didn't say it about breathing. I heard breathing when you said the heart needs oxygen.
Yes.
So this is one of the reasons why, I guess, when we're getting ramped up, that whether you're in yoga or whatever, mm-hmm. people say take a deep breath.
Absolutely.
So it's just taking this deep breath. So is taking a deep breath, when you don't have to, a good preventative measure just for that reason? Or what would you say to that comment?
Yes, because, you know, something that we probably don't really realize is that stress is normal, right? We all experience stress. What the problem is how stress impacts our body, or the way that we let it impact our body, mm-hmm. physically and emotionally and mentally. So it's normal when you think about the fight or flight response, you know, mm-hmm. but it's like, what are you going to do to resolve this stress or a trauma on your body? So deep breathing, meditation, yoga, exercise, taking yourself out of a stressful situation, those are all great things to actually recenter yourself, to decrease your respiratory rate and calm down, which decreases your heart rate and kind of like helps you gather yourself. So breathing is extremely important because, yet again, as you said, it helps to deliver that oxygen to your brain, to your heart, to all the tissues of your body.
Now, I want to ask you this question, but if you're just tuning in to, you're listening to The Relationship Experience. This is Changa Bell, your host, and we're on WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and more. We have Dr. V in the studio, anesthesiologist, and just an all-around great person. On her website, and it's Ask Dr. V, correct?
Yes, that's it.
On her website, Ask Dr. V, you talk about teaching people to care for themselves through love and mm-hmm. kindness, and these aren't typical things that a medical doctor would promote, are they? And if they are, you school me, but why is it that you have this approach to the work you do?
Well, I think the most important thing that I try to tell people, especially when I'm out in the community talking, or whether I'm, you know, like on Dr. Oz or the Today Show or some of the other outlets I've been on, is that prevention is really key. That mm-hmm. a lot of us don't look to, you know, care about our bodies until it's telling us we're sick. Mm-hmm. And that's really too late, especially in our community. You know, men don't go to the doctor. I mean, Tanga, when was the last time you saw the doctor?
Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Huh?
Uh-huh.
Right,
exactly. Your kids see the doctor more than you do.
Of course. Well, I go, well, my doctor is great, and he...
Look at this. He's
he's great. He talks with me, and he tells me I don't have to come back until like a year or so, because he already knows that I have a lot of panic. So I don't know if you know my story with the way I got to yoga was I was having some sort of heart arrhythmias, and
yes.
to the point of my heart stopping. So it would just stop beating in my chest.
Right.
And so they had no idea what was going on with me. And so they wanted to give me a pacemaker. And I sort of worked my way out of that situation with a very sincere prayer, a very fearful prayer I had one night with God. And mm-hmm. I was like, if you bless me to wake me up on the next morning, I will do my best to take care of my body. And I did. You know, I didn't go to sleep for maybe 34 hours.
Wow.
Because I was that scared.
Absolutely.
And the nurse had woke me up, poking me in my arm like I was done because the heart monitors went off. And, you know, I looked over. It was in like the 20s, 28. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of apprehension around it. So what I try to do is be preventative as possible. And my doc, he's a Jainist, mm-hmm. which is a supreme form of Hinduism and being a yogi. So we get it in, and I do try to see him every 6 months or so. So I do want to say that I'm being better about it now.
Yes.
But you're right. You know, I guess men don't tend to go to the doctor as much.
They don't. And then, you know, for us women, a lot of us don't really take care of ourselves once we have a family that, you know, comes first. But for me, you know, prevention really is key because mm-hmm. you really need to get in tune with your body, just as you did in that instance where you were having those episodes of your heart be going all the way down to your 20s. Now, we talk about oxygen. Your body's not getting good oxygen right. to perfuse all the rest of the organs of your body if your heart is beating that slow. So it is important for you to know your body. It's important to be in tune with what's not normal for your body. Mm-hmm. It's important for you to know your family history. You know, a lot of us, you know, in the Black community, we have diabetes heavily prevalent in our family. Mm-hmm. We have high blood pressure, Alzheimer's, strokes, things like that. All that's really important when you start to frame out what could potentially be an issue for you later on. Mm-hmm. So I really think it's important for you to develop a relationship with your primary care physician, but also with yourself so
exactly.
that you guys as a team can really identify what's best for your care, because you are your best advocate, you know, and it's important for you to know what's normal and what's not normal for yourself.
Now, I don't know if you're unique in that approach, because I know, especially I have lots of children, and it took us a while to find a doctor because we get a mm-hmm. lot of pushback as if we don't know what's best
right.
and know what's best. And we try to advocate first from a holistic standpoint, and are generally met with, you know, a little bit of rage almost.
Right.
So I appreciate you having that standpoint. And so you mentioned your family. How are you dealing with things in your family in a lighthearted sense? Do mm-hmm. you sometimes, when your husband's getting on your nerves, do you just knock him out? Like, do you just
no.
go by and spritz some anesthesia stuff in the air and
no.
it just falls?
Since I watched enough crime drama, I realized I would be the first
number one suspect,
and they know what I do, so I would not get away with it. You know, we don't have those dramas.
Mm.
The interesting thing, I mean, you talk about holism. I mean, he's a chiropractor, and he is very natural,
mm-hmm.
Which is a difference compared to me. And even the way that we choose to raise our children, the mm-hmm. foods that they're exposed to, you know, we discussed the issue surrounding immunizations. I mean, he has a different perspective than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important because it's our family and we both want the best for our children to really kind of like come to a common ground, you know, and respect each other, but yet and still and first and foremost realize that we still want the same thing. And so I think that goes back to being an advocate for your family, being an mm-hmm. advocate for yourself, that, you know, if you go to a doctor and they're saying, this is what I want to do, and you're wholeheartedly against it,
right.
you can leave.
And that's what we have had to do.
Yeah. And I mean, here in Baltimore, I mean, if you really think about the history of you know, African-Americans, I mean, think about Henrietta Lacks, you know,
mm-hmm.
and how the pap smear was developed. And they found out so much about cervical cancer from her.
Right.
You know, and think about Tuskegee.
Yeah.
So it's okay for you to question. You know, it's okay for you to say, you know what, let me come back. Let me get a second opinion. I do kind of caution people about the internet because
right.
you can Google anything and find anything you want on the internet. You know, I have people every single day that come in terrified when they're having surgery. Like, I was researching last night about this surgery can be done awake. And I'm like, why would you do that?
Right. Yeah, no, I recommend not doing that.
Yes.
I will never forget that.
Stay off the internet.
And now let me ask you this question. So from a practical medical standpoint,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, because we're sort of saying similar things, which is great, but what can a person do? So the first part of that question is, what is happening in the body when we're experiencing stress?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, but that I kind of don't like that question because I think a lot of us are unaware of the fact that we're under a lot of stress until
right.
it's too late. So we'll have some symptoms that are light and sort of not there. But what's like a disciplined practice that you would recommend, you know, I guess as a person and a doctor, mm-hmm. that someone could do that's listening to the show that knows maybe they're having some heart issues, maybe their heart's starting to skip here and there, or they get indigestion after they eat and it feels more like a mild heart attack.
Right.
What are some practical things you can do daily to ameliorate these effects?
Well, I mean, any issue, like you're saying, whether it's anxiety or whether, you know, you're not getting good sleep, the first thing is to identify what your stressor is. You know, is it your children? Is it your spouse? Is it your boss? You know, whatever situation you're about to go into that could be stressful, take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
Take a moment. Meditate. Close your eyes. Pray. Whatever it is that's going to help kind of center you and make you feel a little bit more calm. If you're in a circumstance where you can get up and you can walk away for a moment, even if it's just excuse yourself to the bathroom and close your eyes and just sit and breathe for a moment, that's extremely beneficial to the body, you know, from a perspective of clearing your mind, but mm-hmm. also slowing your heart rate down, slowing your breathing down, recentering. Stress affects every organ of your body. You mm-hmm. talked about indigestion. You know, people that are stressed get heartburn, they get acid reflux, and it can feel like you're having a heart attack. I mean, it's very painful. And then if you think you're having a heart attack, you end up in the ER, and then you get
right.
a bill, and then it's like the whole cycle goes back again. You're stressed
right.
out about everything. So most importantly, I really think it's about prevention. It's about knowing your body, getting in tune with your body. And then, as we talked about, breathing. I mean, it really, truly is very important. And then find something that helps you de-stress, whether it's going to the gym, whether it's having a glass of wine at the end of the night,
mm-hmm.
whether it's yoga. You know, it could be anything, taking a short walk. So you need to find something that helps you cope with whatever stressors you have going on in your life.
And that's an interesting point. I noticed that in a study of centenarians, people that live over 100 years old, that one of the key factors in sustaining that life was at least a glass or two of wine per evening.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually people that do not drink don't live as long.
So. Right. Well, I mean, multiple studies have come out that have shown that red wine actually has antioxidants that mm-hmm. actually are good for you. And the funny thing is grape juice has the exact same thing. So if you don't want to drink, or, you know, you're underage, or
right.
maybe you're in recovery, you can even have grape juice, and that works too. And the funny thing is, you know, speaking about love, you know, it's been shown that when a man is married, he actually lives longer than mm-hmm. a man that's not married. Sadly, women, we don't live longer when we're married, probably because we're picking up and doing more for them so that they can live longer. But,
know,
it's good for your health to be married, fellas.
Oh,
so, Changi, you're doing the right thing.
Yeah. I know I did the right thing. I'll say amen to that. But for fellas listening, that does not mean go out and just get married because, you know, we got to watch our board operator in there. You know, he might wife up just to live longer. I know how Dre does it. You don't want to just marry, though, right? Because
true,
then you
true.
Can increase your levels of stress.
Absolutely.
Increase the amount of tension in your body. And definitely it's a huge responsibility. And I always say, just a real quick, I'll have a preacher moment,
mm-hmm.
that when you marry through that person, you marry through to the relationship you have with the higher creator. You don't marry their faults, their issues, because that makes for a very bad marriage.
True.
But in any event.
That's another show, Changa.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What is your favorite thing, Dr. V, to do personally? How do you de-stress? Because if you guys could see her in studio, she has not near stress line on her forehead. And you're just as relaxed as I don't know what you look like, the yogini. And I don't know, maybe I look stressed.
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I get up at 4:30, 4:45 every day.
Wow.
I'm out the house by 6 at the very latest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm walking into the operating room at 6:30, getting ready to take care of my first patient. You know, for me, the funny thing is the drive home, even, you know, when it was an hour
mm-hmm.
or even if it was 15 minutes, that was very therapeutic for me. To turn on some music, to the weather's good outside, like roll the windows down and like turn my music up and just kind of listen to a little bit of music. And that really helped me kind of like clear my mind of the day. But
it sounds very disciplined. What does a 4:30 a.m. sleep time look like the night before? Because I wake up at 4:30 every morning, mm-hmm. but it's for another reason. It's just because the bladder is just not happy.
Got you. Okay.
That may be TMI. But
No. It never is when you're a physician. That's all right. Yeah. I mean, it's good to stay hydrated.
Yes.
I mean, it depends on the night. You know what I mean? Like, I have a 1-year-old and a 2-year-old, so sleep is a little bit of a challenge to come by these days. So, you know, it'd be nice to say I get in bed by 9. Some days it's midnight. You know, it just depends upon what's going on. I mean, before I came in, made sure that I, you know, put a little something in the oven for the kids and came out to spend a good portion of my evening with you.
Well, thank you so much, because I know how important the sleep is. That's why I wanted to mention that. Dr. V, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
I hope we can have you back again.
I would love to.
And talk about some more medical things and maybe some things more directly related to anesthesia. We're going to take a short break. When we come back from the other side, we will have in studio Dr. Mike Miller. We'll be talking about his book, Heal Your Heart. You are listening to The Changa Bell Show on WEAA 88.9, your source for cool jazz and more.
Bouncing down the walls of inhibition, evaporating all of my fears, baptizing me into complete submission, dissolving my condition with his tears. It's just like the water.
And welcome back to the Relationship Experience. I'm your host, Changa Bell. Tonight, we've been talking about the effects of stress on the heart. Dr. V was in the first half, and she added personal and professional insight into the body's biological reaction. But now we're going to get an emotional deconstruction, because we have Dr. Michael Miller in. He's a practicing physician for over 25 years, and he'll stray off maybe a little bit of the allopathic path, because he has a holism background as well. But Dr. Mike, go ahead and interview yourself. All right, yeah, Mike, interview yourself.
Well, Changa, it's great to be here. You know, I just want to say from at the outset that my wife just loves your classes.
So,
We had you as one of our guests at the Center of Integrative Health last fall, and amazing reviews. So
yeah.
Everybody really appreciated it. And so you really know the idea, the fact that you know, heart disease is so important, and a study that just came out today from the American Heart Association said that the way things are going, that within the next 25 years, that by the time you're 45 years old, that there is a 50% chance that you're going to have heart disease.
Wow, that is not good news for me, as I'm 44. So I'm going to look into that study. What is that? What are the studies? Where is that data based on? Like, where is it coming from?
Yeah, so I think the data is largely based on the fact that over the course of the last 20, 30 years, that we've become, I think, a little bit less active, where there's more diabetes out there. There's just people that are still smoking. So, and we're just not taking good care of ourselves. We're just not managing stress, as Dr. V had said just the last half hour. So I think all of those come into play and really affect us, because when we think of heart disease, it's really day in and day out stressors. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to feel a little bit stressed if you're taking an examination, for example. You want to feel a little bit stressed and get psyched for it. But the day in and day out stressors is what's really an issue. But the good news is that there are lots of little things we can do every day that can make a big difference.
Right. Now, Two interesting things about that. So one is that you're a medical doctor, and you, in your book, Heal Your Heart, you have chakra healing smoothies. So that's a very interesting take. But before we go into to that realm, and I want to ask you about that, you also detail sort of 9 factors that explain more than 90% of the heart attacks worldwide. And I'm always shocked when I see people smoking cigarettes still, because I thought it was a fad. I thought it went out of style. And I guess it's too early or too soon to get data on vaping. But I would assume that vaping, would it, does it still have the same effects as cigarettes? And can you speak about some of those nine factors so that maybe we can avoid doing those?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the four main factors is high blood pressure, mm-hmm. high cholesterol, having diabetes, and basically smoking. So those four really probably comprise about 80% of heart disease. And then the other five include not eating well. Mm-hmm. So, for example, not eating vegetables on a daily basis, not exercising. The one big one of all them is stress. Stress accounts for about over 30% of heart disease worldwide. So not just in the States, but mm-hmm. worldwide. And the way I like to think about it is that stress really is, in a way, the centerpiece. Because what happens when you're stressed out? If you smoke, you're going to smoke more. You want to eat some comfort foods. You're probably not going to get a good night's sleep. That drives hypertension and drives insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes almost a domino effect where just being stressed out really contributes to other habits and bad things that can happen to you over again, a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
If it's one bad day, you know, we as human beings are designed to be able to react to an acute stressful situation. So, for example, if you're walking down the street and a car's coming right at you,
right.
your reaction is to be really alert and get out of the way. But and that's good. We adopted that. But if this is a day in and day out situation, right. if you're living your life just being stressed out all the time and not dealing with it, it's an issue.
And so, hence the reason why giving yourself, whether it's fake or not, it's designed through a yoga mindfulness practice. You're actually doing the opposite. You're giving yourself these casual and very calm scenarios. So you may not be able to get to the beach, but if you could just get to the mat and envision a beach. Oh, I get it. That's very interesting. Now, so you have a very, so in your book, Heal Your Heart, you have a very personal testimony to what led you down this work. Would you mind talking a little bit about that testimony? It's very moving. And, you know, I had some interactions with you and felt like I knew you, but I really knew you once I read that. And it's a very powerful testimony. If you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners.
Sure. Yeah. And it really, my whole interest in medicine really came about when I was very young and my father was we were living in New York at the time, in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and he was in a really high, stressful job, and he didn't really manage himself well. He smoked. Every time I remember seeing pictures of him when he was in the Army, and he always had cigarette in his mouth, and the same thing here when I was growing up, when I was young, and then one day, my mother got a call. Both my brother and I were taking a bath, and my mother got a call to rush to the hospital. So we got to the hospital, and I remember seeing him because he was laying on the gurney. It was a July day, but his hands were cold as ice. Mm. And if your hands are cold as ice on a hot summer day and you're not feeling well, that means your blood vessels have really constricted down. Mm. And he was basically, at the time, in shock. His heart was in shock, and soon, about an hour later, he passed.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Thank you for sharing. That is a very moving testimony and a very useful piece of information for anyone who's listening, that cold hands, not to say that cold hands in the middle of a hot day, you can't get them some other way, but it may be a very highly likely sign that you want to get somewhere near a medical professional. Am I correct in saying that?
Right, especially if you have some shortness of breath or complaining of some discomfort in your chest and just not feeling well. A lot of people who have heart problems may not have that crushing chest pain. They just may basically feel just a tightness, overly fatigued, really tired, and mm-hmm. just not being able to do the things you were doing before, low energy level. So there's, and women generally have a different presentation or may have a different presentation mm-hmm. that men do. The physician who was here before was very astute because she pointed out that when men are married in a good marriage, mm-hmm. they tend to live longer, but women often do not. So, and that's probably because a woman needs to have a wife, and men probably should be spending more time trying to help they're women.
I'm going to say that on next week's show when we deal with romantic love, that women need to have a wife. And that was a direct quote from Dr. Michael Miller. Yeah, you're right. Dr. V was talking about that. And your book has an alarming stat like that, that unmarried men have a mortality rate up to 250% higher than married men. And that suicide rates for divorced men are 39% higher. So I found that fascinating. And that divorced middle-aged women are 60% more likely to have heart disease.
Right. And you heard today that actually a couple of days ago, Jennifer Ashton, she's a CBS physician. Mm. She just divorced from her husband and he just jumped off the bridge in New Jersey.
Yeah, now that's
the GW Bridge.
That's insane. I do my best to see. I could take that news coming from you face to face, so I try not to watch the news. That's been one of the ways I've been able to mitigate stress in my life too. So I don't invite it in as I'm eating dinner or even at night before I go to bed. So that's not.
But Changa, so what I tell my patients is the only time to watch the news is the last minute of
right,
the news.
Right.
Because they usually, if it's 30 minutes, 29 minutes bad news, the last minute they stress you out on the news until the last minute when they give you an uplifting story.
Yeah, no, it's true. So, and I love that about your book because you speak about these tools and solutions like human touch and connection and in the medical perspective of that. I know that as a yoga teacher, I do a lot of hands-on assisting, and I can see it in a person's body literally the minute if you're touching them in the correct way, not any kind of sensual way, but in the correct energetic way, that they release. Can you talk a little bit about sort of medically what's happening in your body just through the healing cause of touch?
Oh, absolutely. And some really exciting research has shown recently that it's touching but also hugging.
Mm-hmm.
And we know one of the things that I try to tell my patients is to make sure either in the morning, at night, or both to give your loved one a hug. And if you're living by yourself, then grab a teddy bear or grab something else and hug it, because that emotional connection that you feel releases the chemical oxytocin.
Mm-hmm.
And oxytocin is not only calming, but there's also some new research that shows that it can help to regenerate, to build up cells in the heart that are sick.
Mm.
So it's a very exciting area of research right now.
Oxytocin, not to be confused with oxycontin. Why do they sound so similar? What is the root? What is it? Why do they sound so similar? What's going on with that?
Right. So it has to do with pain relief.
Mm.
So oxycontin being a medication
synthetic,
that relieves pain, synthetic, as opposed to oxytocin, chemical released from your brain that actually produces that sensation of relief.
Right. And again, I don't try to push people away from medicine and sort of our westernized view. And I'm happy that it's that we're taking a more holistic approach. But in yoga, we're really just chemicalizing the blood through neurotoxins, through just trying to change the brain to produce the appropriate appropriate chemical in the blood, basically. So, talk a little bit more about your 28 days which is almost like a 12-step program to healing the heart. But I guess before you even get into that, how do your colleagues feel about it? You heard me in an earlier segment mention that I get a lot of resistance. Well, I did in the past. I've happily found people that welcome sort of partnering with me instead of, a Marvin K. Mooney, please go now kind of finger. How are you received with your peers?
Well, it's becoming much more well accepted because we now are realizing that these important chemicals that are produced when you're hugging someone or you're laughing or you're listening to music that you enjoy, really these connections from the brain have direct effects on the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so a really important study that just came out 1 month ago showed that their part of the brain called the amygdala becomes activated mm-hmm. when you're stressed. And what happens is if you have a large, not a stressed out amygdala, but just a large amygdala, which means that you're well socially connected, that is now associated with longevity, living longer,
mm.
and living healthy, happy life. So you want to learn to be able to connect with your feelings, as you mm-hmm. have already spoken about to some extent. And you could do that through a whole lot of different things. And so the 28-day plan really tries to take the best of little things you can do every day to bring out these benefits that are not only good for your brain, your heart, but also will make you just a more joyful person.
So can you simply just cultivate a larger amygdala by making more social connection? Or I would imagine it's meaningful, because we all have Facebook pages with 2,000 friends, 3,000, all of this, but that's not meaningful. So is it a meaningful connection, or how can you cultivate that growing of the amygdala, if you will?
Yeah, so the growing of the amygdala is really through connections where you're interacting. So more personal connections. Now, Facebook is fine to some extent, but you get your friend and you let them know how things are going, but you have to actually meet up with that person and get together mm-hmm. with them and experience things with them that really helps to do that. And the perfect example, if you go to a part of Japan called Okinawa, mm-hmm. there the Okinawans are known to live long. They have great social connections, and they and other parts of the world that live long also have been shown to have these large amygdalas.
Yeah, I've read Dan Buettner, I think is his last name, that book, The Blue Zones, talking about those centenarians, and Okinawa was one of those places we highlighted. If you are just tuning in, you're listening to The Relationship Experience on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. We have in studio with us, so that we can grow our amygdalas together face to face, we have Dr. Michael Miller. And we're talking about the tools and solutions, some very practical solutions you can make in terms of healing stress and the effects of stress on the heart. Dr. Miller, we have a caller, Diane. Diane, you're on the line with Dr. Miller. Welcome to The Relationship Experience.
Hi, Diane. Thank you. This is my second week listening to you. Thank you. And I'm glad you bring in some good information. I wanted to ask the doctor a question, because I work in a school system in Baltimore County. And I notice our children, and we have kindergartners, they are stressed. And you were talking about by the time they get 45, I don't know if they're going to make it, because they are coming in stressed. And one way I do know, you talked about the social media, but we have our children on a lot of devices. Back in the day, they were none of those devices, and children got outside. And now, in certain areas, children cannot come outside because, they have needles on the ground, so their parents don't want them outside. So they into the video games. So how can we as educators get them, to stress down while they're in school? Because I see it, and they jump over tables and stuff all day long,
Yeah, you bring up such a great point, and this is, I think, one of the problems. So there's a difference between having good social connections where you're getting together with your friends and loved ones, as opposed to having all these connections online and having access to basically 24/7 with kids being exposed to cell phones and TV, et cetera. So the way to do it is to really, you have to start at home. And it's really important that parents try to take time to spend with their children, of course, but also after a certain period of time, like after 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, to have those, whether it's TV, everything but radio, because mm-hmm. you want to listen to Changa, but really getting away some of those extra stimulating, over-sensory kinds of tools away from the kids, so that they get a good night's sleep and they just don't think about getting on their cell phone or playing video games right away, because it is really harmful. Overstimulation is really not good. And so what we're doing right now is trying to learn how to de-stress.
Right. And I'm glad you're on too, because I went to the doctor about 2 weeks ago, and she was like, "You're stressing, stressing." Okay, my job is stressful. I work with children with learning disabilities, and, sometimes they can go off. So my job is stressful. Well, what I'm doing now when I come home, I don't turn on the TV for the news. I turn on, they might have a Cosby show on or something like that to get a laugh. And I'd be sitting in here laughing. My mother say, "I thought she was in here talking to somebody." No, I'm laughing to release my stress. So I'm trying. Do you have any other kind of ways that I can do it. I'm going to go back to the gym because I was taking yogurt and meditation, so I know I need to go back there. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So you're doing the right thing. So one thing that I tell, so I have patients that are also in Baltimore City, Baltimore County principals. Mm-hmm. And one thing I stress is that in these stressful positions, to try during the day, to even if it's 10 to 15 minutes, to spend some time alone. Mm-hmm. To be able, because we're being, you know, every way you look, you're being bombarded with information.
Yes.
But, and so what I do, I also recommend in the car to take time, even if it's 5 minutes, shut the radio off so you can collect your thoughts. So you need time during the day. You need mm-hmm. time in the morning and the evening just to collect your thoughts. And then, of course, watching The Cosby Show, anything to give you a good laugh
right.
is really important. Listening perhaps to a little bit of music mm-hmm. on the way home to get what we like to experience is kind of that chill down your spine. Mm-hmm. That means you're getting the benefit, the healthy benefit. And just really spending a good quality time, even if it doesn't have to be hours, but even if it's 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, having meals together if you can, at least a dinner meal mm-hmm. With family members, and just talk about what you experienced during the day. It could be very relaxing.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. Diane, thank you for calling.
Thank you
for calling that second week. And I also want to bring up a good point that Diane brings up, too. In these neighborhood schools, sometimes parents are absent and they're not able to give sort of what we might label proper care. And then the school system, there are rules and regulations around touch. So you can't touch because that may not be appropriate. Another thing you prescribe is aromatherapy. Even in terms of free and reduced meal lunches, they aren't as nutritious. So there really is a bit of a chess game going on in terms of someone like Diane, who I perceive to be a very altruistic person, passionate and caring about her job. And her hands are sort of tied, so to speak. Is there anything, since I've sort of gone through aromatherapy, that may not be allowed touch, that may not be allowed anything that you can think of from a medical perspective that might support her, sort of engendering assistance to parents that may not be able to do it themselves?
Well, one thing that we believe is very therapeutic is to try in the school system even to place a little garden. So whether it's flowers, planting something that the children can come out to and during their breaks could come out and literally smell the flowers. And because it's really, you talk about aromatherapy, which is sense of smell, but it's also vision.
Mm-hmm.
It's also being able to see things and taste things and experience beautiful senses.
Right. So basically food that you eat, you can take in through your eyes, through your ears, and other sensory organs. And all of this you talk about as part of the 28-day positive emotion prescription in your book. Also, there's a healing power of affirmation. There's a heart-healthy affirmation that I'll post to the website that listeners can take advantage of, too. And it simply states, I am sincere about allowing love into my life. Love doesn't triumph. It is constant. I choose to operate from love. True love heals, and it heals all because love exists in everything. Indeed, love has produced all things. So simple affirmations like that, this is sort of what you were prescribing to our caller and to listeners at large, to sit quietly. And even if you don't have something as poetic as an affirmation, just the quiet alone can help settle the body in terms of stress, right?
Right. And there's something now that's coming into become more popular called love and kindness meditation, where,
mm-hmm.
again, you sit by yourself and you just either, if you're by yourself and you could talk aloud or even to yourself, you would say, may I be healthy, may I be happy, may I be at peace, may I be filled with love and kindness. And so you do that to yourself, and then you think about a loved one, and then you even think about someone you may not be so happy with,
mm-hmm.
And try to do the same thing. So in other words, you're giving love to yourself, but also to others.
Yeah, that's a form of that mindfulness-based stress release mm-hmm. That you're speaking of, that love and kindness. So I love that you promote this whole holistic viewpoint. Where can where's a good place that listeners could reach out to you? Like, do you have a blog? Is there, are you active in the community, where can we bump into Dr. Michael Miller?
Yeah, well, so I do have a website mm-hmm. and have a blog in it. It's at drmichaelmiller.org. And I post things, and obviously I have stuff as well on Facebook and Twitter. And we do things in the community as well. We've done things at the Ronald McDonald House mm-hmm. and down at the University of Maryland Medical Center.
Yeah. I'd like to, and I think the most important takeaway that I'm going to take from our conversation tonight, which was important, you were talking about just having a meal and sort of being quiet. I just finished this anti-racism conference, and the takeaway at the end of it all, you know, it's black and white, and it's just multi-ethnic, mm-hmm. Asian, everyone in the room. But the takeaway was not to just go out and try and solve it, but the most important thing to do was to sit, have a meal, and talk, and just sit with the discomfort. And I think that discomfort sort of melts away. And in terms of growing the amygdala, that it was very powerful. So for me personally and what's going on in the background of my life, that's what I'm doing. What do you do on a daily basis that may be offering someone else true inspiration? Because it's always, well, I shouldn't say always, but it's often good to do what the doctor does.
Yeah, so I think, again, it's really trying to really practice holistic medicine with my patients.
And you use that as a form of love and kindness.
Love and kindness for my patients.
Wow.
Down. And it's when I'm making rounds at the hospital. And, of course, most of our patients have some heart-related issues. And try to talk to them about the importance of not only but because if you think about it, if you can practice a holistic approach and get your patients thinking more about trying to take care of themselves, then their blood pressure is naturally going to go down. The blood sugar will help to go down, and just the daily stresses will have somewhat of an impact too.
How do you not get compassion fatigue with that? Like how are you able to stay at a safe space and sort of give people that kind of because I can see it. I'm looking in your eyes right now. So you're giving energy, but how do you keep a protective measure so that you're not taking it home and placing it into your home and into your life to the point where you might need support?
Well, that's why you always come home and say, honey, I'm home.
And
get the hug from my wife and kids. And yeah. So it really does work both ways.
All right, so that grounds you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so do you have a favorite affirmation or something that you might want to share? You're an author. I don't know if you're a poet. I don't know. I didn't get a chance to sort of eke out some hidden talents in you, and I don't see you with your guitar. We have about 30 more seconds that we're going to be on air, and I really want our listeners to see the human side, and that's why I kept both interviews lighthearted, to see the doctors of people too, because like I mentioned, I had these sort of terse involvements and interactions. And I think what both you and Dr. V represent are partners in care, which is a great thing to have. So is there a favorite poem that you have?
Not so much a favorite poem. I just think just in general, I try not to take myself too seriously.
Yeah.
And I think, and I try to also relate that to my patients, because what happens is if you feel so tight all the time that actually, and you clench your fist, that drives up blood pressure and it stresses you out. So just to try to feel relaxed and just go with the flow, I think are things that make for someone who could, be part of a joke and be okay with it.
And see, and there you have it from Dr. Michael Miller, not Mac Miller, who said relax and go with the flow, like any hip hop artist would say. I want to thank you for listening in tonight on the conversation this evening. I want to thank WEAA producer Iore, board operator Andre Melton, of course, show creator and line producer, my wife, Devonna Bell, our special guests, Dr. V and Dr. Michael Miller, as I said before, and you're listening to music from Take Off the Blues by The Foreign Exchange, and we also featured music tonight from Lauryn Hill, a track titled Just Like Water. You've been listening to The Relationship Experience, a place where a shift happens and the discovery of the most important relationship of all happens, the one with yourself. This is your source and your choice for Cool Jazz and More, WEAA 88.9 FM.